Have you ever had a feeling that something dreadful was about to happen?
This whole premise is sweaty.
Okay, moving right along.
You gonna plagiarize the whole thing for us? Do you have any thoughts of your own on this matter?
Just remember that this thing isn't as black as it appears.
Hold on to your butt.
The only difference between me and a homeless man is his job.
I'm glad you're here to tell us.
I'm looking for the least possible amount of responsibility.
And that ain't bad.
I'm in a glass case of emotion.
Man's got to know his limitations.
I'm glad you came back.
In the bag.
Network.
I drink it up.
Wait, is someone drinking a big gulp or something?
Yeah, I'm having a. It's just a Pepsi, but it's. I put it in a Gatorade bottle and pack it with ice, so it's extra delicious.
The Jay Skis is, he needs to get hydrated before this.
So it is kind of like drinking out of a big gulp without a lid on.
I'm drinking from a normal person's cup.
Alan, you are always keeping it on the norms, huh?
I am always keeping it on the norms. Mm. That was actually my full senior year superlative.
Nice. But all right. Welcome to the Bagpod, everyone. We've got Alan, Joe Dog, Jimmy TV. What's up, guys?
What's up? A delightful Sunday evening of television.
Bag.
Yeah, oh, yes. very epic. Very epic last night. Let's just dive right into our Game of Thrones, the payoff episode, if you will, for the most part, at least for all the King's Landing hodgepodge with Blackwater, which was written by good old Georgie Porgy.
The man himself.
Costanza?
Unfortunately, not George Costanza. It might have been a little bit more hilarious, perhaps.
Yeah, maybe.
But, yeah, no, we had... It was,
I don't know, there was some pretty hilarious stuff in this. Did you guys see the pyromancer really...
Oh, man, dude, he was really geeking out. He was geeking out so hard.
Yeah, Pyromancer and Joffrey were geeking out real hard at the very beginning of that battle. They were all real excited, and then Tyrion just looks like he took a dump in his pants the whole time as he watches the horror in front of him.
Pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Clearly, this battle scene was different from the books. We mentioned a chain, whether they were going to bring in a chain throughout many podcasts. Basically, in the books, what happens is Tyrion builds this huge chain that he puts underneath the water in the bay, and he gets all of the ships to come in closer towards King's Landing, towards basically a river neck, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're coming up the river.
And then
they're coming from the sea into the bay, I think, or space, or some shit like that.
Yeah, and then he raises that chain, and he traps all of the ships in the bay there, and then they throw a bunch of wildfire down upon the ships.
And part of the brilliance of the chain, I thought, was not so much of its existence, but I'm blanking on his name. Stannis' hand.
Davos.
The Davos saw the chain from like a mile away and was like, "That's weird. Like, why do they have the chain?" And then like he saw it go up and he was like, "Well, I don't." He's like, "Why would we need to get back out?" That's like, you know, like he kind of saw it and thought through it, and you know,
mm-hmm.
He wasn't completely taken unawares by it.
Yeah,
he's seen a chain or two before.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
The chain also in the book gives sort of like the people of King's Landing some work. But that's completely breezed over by...
It keeps them busy.
Yeah, that's completely breezed over in the show.
It keeps them hating the demon monkey.
Exactly.
but yeah, so instead of this huge chain, we get a crewless ship that randomly floats into the bay.
And oh, that was in the book, though. There were at least two ships that were supposed to be just stuffed with green stuff and just like kind of oozing it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Much like TMNT2, Secret of the Ooze.
Yeah, exactly like it, actually.
No.
in any case, neither side realized what was going on. I know Davos was like, "What the hell? There's only one ship." And then on the other side, I feel like on the wall, at least I guess Joffrey didn't know, right? He was like,
Joffrey
what
didn't
is
know.
Up with the one ship?
I mean, they were making it out like the only people who knew were Tyrion, Bronn, and then the Pyromancer. There was no way that he was geeking out that badly. That, I mean, he had to have known, you know?
Yeah, no, the Pyromancer was all about that ship.
And he even chuckled at one point.
He was
so happy.
He was like up on his toes and stuff like that. Yeah, he was. He pulled a Grandmaster Pycelle after having sex with that whore.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did. But yeah, no. Clearly, I'm gonna assume half of the budget went to the ridiculous explosion of green as Bronn. Maybe the Bronn hitting the ship.
He didn't actually hit the ship. He hit the
trail of wildfire. Yeah. Like he just looked like a total badass with that huge bow.
He was awesome.
Yeah, it was nice to actually see Bronn. We haven't really seen Bronn do much in terms of fighting, and so it was nice to see that he can in fact hold his own. But yeah, no, that explosion was absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, it was really sweet.
I squealed like a little girl when that happened. I wasn't expecting the explosion to be that big.
Yeah, it was huge.
Yeah.
I thought it would just burn and then people would be like, oh no, we gotta go away from the ship. Like, it fucked everybody up. I thought the battle was over at that point.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew it wasn't going to be, but yeah, it looked like it should have been, considering, like, all of the ships we saw on screen were instantly
got wrecked.
Blown up.
Yeah. Blown up or blown to, like, off the side. Like, got knocked over by just the explosion.
Yeah. It was.
We saw a lot of dudes falling over railings. That kind of upset me. I think we saw like 20 people fall over railings.
They were just they were just trying to put that fire out, son.
I guess so.
Wait, you were upset that they fell over the rail, like that they didn't get blown up, or what do you mean?
No. It just felt like there were two. They just kept showing us like all the stock footage of people falling over railings.
That is true.
Because, I mean, that's far and away probably the cheapest way that they could show devastation happening is just one dude falling over a railing. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, nothing large scale.
A bunch of people just jumping overboard.
Yeah.
I've got a question here. I mean, I guess we kind of skipped over everything pre-battle. There's one thing that was rather disturbing to me during the pre-battle, and that was when the guy puked into the barrel. But the barrel was full. Wondering what the hell
of
is
puke,
in
right?
I think that was the point that the whole barrel was filled with puke.
It looked like the same color, that's for sure.
Shit is gross.
I think it's just because everyone's pretty intense about what's about to happen. Mm-hmm. So intense that they filled up that barrel.
Yeah, man, I thought that was a good way to kick off the episode. That was the first scene.
Yeah, it was pretty solid.
It was kind of like the opening scene in Saving Private Ryan when they're going.
Right.
Yeah, I guess it, I mean, it really was.
Yeah, it was like their D-Day.
Mm-hmm.
We also get, I think, is this the first time a song is sung? At least throughout the entire song almost is sung? Because we get that nice little...
We get the Reigns of Castamere.
They really were singing it up. That had to have been like a real... Like, George must have really wanted to throw in some of his songs, because he's got so many songs that he just loves.
Did they start singing the Bear and the Bee song or whatever it is at one point?
Oh, the Pot of Honey or what have you?
Yeah.
Have they done that? Did they do that?
I feel like they might have.
I think they talked about it at least.
Yeah, I feel like someone might have started humming it or something.
Yeah, that sounds
there
right.
There was a little quip or something.
right. Someone was like, shut the fuck up.
But yeah, no, Bronn was definitely trying to enjoy himself up in the bar with his biddy there, and then... The good old hound comes in trying to destroy...
Shitting in everyone's cereal.
Yeah, Mr. Buzzkill over here. Yeah.
Seriously, his fucking attitude.
The hound, I don't know what...
Why was he hating on Bronn so much?
I don't know, but it was a great added scene. I mean, it was because we never see them together, so it was a cool new dynamic to explore.
Yeah.
I'm sure. I would assume that's what George R. R. Martin wanted to do, wanted to kind of see how they would interact.
They seem like two people who are kind of opposites of how they handle war. Like, Hound is kind of just always a monster, and that's how he deals with it. And Bronn is just kind of like this happy-go-lucky kind of personality. You can see them having tension between them. Right. They're both such good warriors.
Yeah
the Hound really internalizes all that, all the the kind of the struggle with having to with killing people and everything like that. He really carries that with him, but Braun seems to be able to just let it float off him.
I was thinking maybe the Hound might have been a little jealous too, considering that Braun was kind of put in charge of the Gold Cloaks at least.
Yeah, and he so, has like, his whole face.
Yeah, well, yeah, that as well. So that was a pretty solid scene as well. And
do you think Georgie Porgy enjoys doing these added scenes, or is he like, what are these guys doing adding scenes? Bullshit.
No, I mean, I think that's all George. I think George wanted to do that.
Yeah, I think he enjoys doing them too.
Well, there was one commentary last year that Georgie was on, and he was just like, oh yeah, this is a great added scene. Like, he was saying something about how he didn't have a backstory for Alistair Thorne, I think it was. And he was like, yeah, the backstory that Weiss, that David Weiss, or D.B. Weiss and Benioff created was just great. I wouldn't have even thought of it. There's some nonsense like that. So I think he likes the fact that they're adding, as long as maybe they get his approval first.
Right.
Mm-hmm. What else about this, about the battle? How about Stannis going fucking Iron Man?
Let me just say one more thing about the pre-battle. And okay. That is
pre-battle.
Where did this like fucking baller ass drum beat come from?
Oh my god, I laughed out loud when they did that. I laughed out loud when he was like drums, and he started like yeah doing some like.
Well, the beat. Table. I mean, the beat was just like da 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 da. But then yeah, whenever they played like over it, yeah, they really broke it down.
I mean, like the other ships were like adding shit and like. Well, that's different beats and stuff, and I was just like,
It was like each boat had its own little timpani thing that they could really, really break things down on.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I was like, when did this turn into the Broadway production to stop?
Yeah. So, but all right. So basically, after the pre-battle, we just go back and forth between two places here. We're on the shores, I suppose, outside of King's Landing, and then we're also in Maegor's Holdfast. With a breastplated Cersei and Sansa.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. What? I guess, I mean, they storm the beach, right? And everyone's just like, holy shit, they're still coming. And then, yeah, and as Joe said earlier, Stannis went buck wild.
Yeah, seeing, you know, a third of his fleet or whatever blown up by green fire really, really put Stannis in FU mode.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he...
That might have been the worst thing to do to Stannis' army.
Yeah. Because
it pissed Stannis off. It got Stannis fired up.
Apparently you don't want to piss off Stannis.
No.
Yeah.
No. I mean, when he scaled that ladder, basically by himself...
It starts well before that. It starts with... Hadn't been on the first one of the longboats or whatever with his his George Washington crossing the Delaware pose, like he had his sword up on like the railing or whatever, and he was just kind of, you know, he just jot himself out there. I mean, he was just asking to be hit by something.
It was awesome because like that's what a fucking king is supposed to do, and it was the opposite of what Joffrey was doing. Like he was being the real man in that situation. I love the juxtaposition of how the two of them handled that situation.
That was awesome. Also, the pre-battle.
Joffrey's talking all kinds of shit before the battle. You know he's not.
Sansa giving him a little smack around verbally was excellent.
Yeah, she showed off Sansa there for sure.
Yeah. And I also really liked right before that when Tyrion's getting his armor put on and he's talking with Varys and he was standing up on a table so that Podrick Payne could, you know, do everything. Yeah. I thought that was funny. He's a dwarf. He's the half man, not the quarter man.
Yes, exactly.
Very true, very true.
Yeah, but yeah, Sansa needling Joff was pretty choice.
That was real nice. But yeah, no, Stannis, I mean, I understand that the juxtaposition between Joffrey just chilling there and like peeing his pants and Stannis just going hog wild is there to like show the difference between the kings or at least how a real king is supposed to lead. But still, like, Stannis... You would assume Stannis would at least make sure he had some people around him as opposed to being the first dude off the boat and like 10 feet ahead of everyone else by the time that everyone else lands.
Well, that's what, he was setting the pace of aggression, and like that's what the Lannister side was kind of trying to get Joffrey to understand, that like the king being out there is good for morale, and they're only going to fight as hard as you look like you want this. I mean, that's why, you know, when Joffrey left, the Lannister army was just like, oh, fuck this. We're just going to stay here, like, you know, and Tyrion had to get them back up. But, like, Stannis just running in like that, like, that must have charged everybody up, especially after they took such a devastating loss. Like, he had to pump everybody up.
Yeah, but on the flip side, Stannis is the only dude out on the beach. If the archers decided to just focus in on Stannis and he would have died, would the other soldiers have been like, oh, they killed Stannis, let's keep going? Or would they be like, oh, holy shit, they killed Stannis, let's just lay down our shit right now?
You know? Yeah, that would have been the end of it.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, I understand that Stannis is trying to be baller and all this nonsense, but, like, a little strategy could have been utilized on Stannis' part as well.
Go ahead, Bex.
No, I had nothing.
Keep going. Okay, I also like the juxtaposition of Stannis' speech with Tyrion's speech.
What was the gist of the two speeches?
How simplistic Stannis' was.
Yeah,
you know? it was so much more about action than words, mm-hmm. which is what Stannis is.
It reflected their character.
Exactly.
But I feel like Tyrion needed to choose some words as well, considering.
Well, no, I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean, you know, Stannis is stoic. You know, he's not supposed to be this verbose, you know, guy, this, you know, wordsmith. You know, he's supposed to be kind of just this, you know, fucking, you know, stone, you know, leader, whereas Tyrion is supposed to be the very verbose guy, the guy who's really good with words and the one that can inspire with words. Yeah. So I thought, I mean, I'm not saying either one of them was bad. I just liked how it showed each of their own characters.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Their traits.
Alan, was it clear that Stannis was getting pulled away by his own men, or did you think he had been captured at the end?
No, at the time when I watched it, I thought that he had been captured, and it wasn't until, like, I read reviews later that I understood that he was being pulled away by his own people.
Yeah, they didn't do that very well.
I kept wondering, how are they going to show Stannis getting off the wall? Yeah, I was like, yeah. How are they going to get him off? As soon as he got up there, I was like, oh, shit, wait, what's going to happen with Stannis? Like, is Davos going to come out of this, like, nowhere and just yank his ass off the wall? Because we don't really know any of his other troops. So I was like, oh, man, this might be bad.
Exactly. And plus, we didn't really see any of his other troops scale the wall up the ladder. Like, right. The dude behind him gets hit with a rock. And then every other scene, we see Stannis on the wall. It looks like he's alone, just like hacking back and forth between, you know,
going
on his opposite
Werewolf Berserker style.
Yeah,
I thought maybe he was going to work his way all the way like through the, like down in, onto the into the courtyard and then back out through the way that Tyrion went, and then like pop back out on the beach and then be like, oh shit, we're fucked. Once he sees everyone else coming in, and then he would just roll out. But yeah, I wasn't.
Stannis doesn't just roll out.
Obviously not.
How many different people's faces do you think were left on that beach? Because it seemed like every few minutes,
pieces of lots of faces.
Yeah, lots of like eyeballs and tongues. Like people like would just be standing there, and then all of a sudden their face would just fucking explode with iron.
Oh yeah. Well,
some part of their body would explode. I mean, Hound definitely cut at least. I think Hound cut two people in half, one horizontally and one diagonally.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that one guy, the top of his dome gets chopped off.
There. Oh, my God. That was
awesome. Stannis chops the top of someone's dome off.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what the physics is behind chopping someone in half, but I'm assuming they were a little loose without it.
And then Pod blew up that one dude's face with a spear.
Yeah, from inside out. Yeah, that was sweet.
Who Papi? Was – what was – well, actually, before I get to this, did the battle feel epic enough? I mean, I realize that they don't have a budget of the movie, so they clearly had to, like, film close in so it made it look like there were a bunch of bodies when, in fact, there weren't that many. But do you feel it was epic enough? Do you feel like it was
absolutely
clear that...
Absolutely.
I was impressed.
I mean, and this is what we were talking about last week. There were some claims that, like, I guarantee that this won't feel epic enough from some people. And I thought it was... immense. Like, it's never going to match what you imagine reading a book, but for television, I've never seen anything close to that size on television before. Mm-hmm. And so I was completely blown away by the scale of it, even if it wasn't like what it would be if it was a 2-hour movie.
Yeah.
You know what I think really helped too was the way that they had it set up with like the huge CG armada of ships coming in, and then they all get blown up, and then you know, like their strategy is like gone. So they're like, all right, let's just attack. So yeah. Like if they had kept with like the big boat, you know, naval battle and then landing and stuff like that, I think it would have been really problematic. Mm-hmm. But with them just kind of disappearing and then being like, all right, we're just going to storm the beach, and then
basically
it was a lot easier.
Enabling them to go no CGI, kind of.
Exactly.
And then being able to go CGI to no CGI.
Yeah, and keeping it focused, too. They're like, look, all right, we're going to have to storm the beach. We're going to storm this one gate. It's go time, as opposed to, like, huge, you know, like, columns of troops going in. You know, it made it into more of, like, a guerrilla fight.
Like some Lord of the Rings type shit.
Exactly, yeah. But, yeah, I was definitely impressed. Definitely impressed. And, I was worried about them kind of just using the night time as a crutch. But, man, they definitely did not with that huge explosion. I thought it was pretty sweet.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I don't know. Maybe interesting is not the word, but it was just really different to see, because we're on HBO. Just getting to see the viciousness of this battle, like you don't get to usually see that on television. And epic stories like this, like Lord of the Rings scenes, like there was a lot of brutality, but a lot of it is like, you know,
there weren't faces exploding.
Right. Or if it is, it's like an orc or some like generic monster that you don't really care about what happens to them. So it's just like really crazy to watch that much death on TV. Mm-hmm. It's like gangs in New York.
That's true. While we're getting the battle here, we also go inside to the safest part of the castle there, and they intersplice these scenes.
Is it the safest part of the castle?
Obviously not, with Cersei going
with the executioner and the drunkard queen with a vial of poison. I don't think it's the safest place in the castle.
Oh my god, her scenes
were
so brilliant.
There's so much tension in that room. Yeah,
it was great. It really was. Every time we came back, she was just a little bit more in her cuffs, just a little bit deeper in her cuffs.
Oh my god, she was so good.
She was definitely. They were definitely making that comparison with Robert there too, you know, since Robert was always drunk. She's starting to get on her drunken ways. So.
She's starting to turn into Robert. I also really liked her first scene with Grandmaster Pycelle when she's getting the poison, and she just tries to dismiss him like immediately, like pull him off immediately, but he doesn't really like take the hint and kind of hangs around a little bit longer. I thought that was awesome. Mm-hmm. She was so pissed.
What was the deal with her breastplate?
Well, she's got to just put on appearances, you know, or what have you.
That shit looked ridiculous.
It did. I mean, the fitting didn't look right or anything like that. It looked very hastily done.
It looked like they just pasted it onto the front of her, and there was nothing like holding it in on the back. I don't know. It just looked
I see what you're saying. Like it was part of her shirt or something that.
Like something you'd wear at a costume party.
Exactly. It was real cheap. It wasn't movie quality.
Do you think the scenes were maybe a little too long in Maegor's Holdfast, or maybe they were just, they could have maybe cut them up a little bit better, or do you feel that like it helped build the drama going on outside as well?
I thought it was perfect. I thought that stuff was perfect.
To me, it felt like that this was, it was a successful episode because of how large the battle was, but then they also, you know, like you said, interspliced these quiet scenes that were like meditations on war and people discussing, you know, what the ramifications of this are, and her like torturing Sansa the entire episode about, you know, this is what happens when a city is sacked. And like, I think that she'd given up hope long, even though she wasn't taking this seriously before. It seemed like this night she'd given up hope and was just like, if I'm going down, I'm going to torture and kill as many people on my way down with me.
Everyone in here is getting raped.
Yeah.
A little bit of rape. Mm-hmm. should be in for a bit of rape.
Mm. Yeah, holy shit.
Mambo number 6.
Oh, my God.
I felt that sometimes the scenes dragged on a little too long, but, it, I mean, clearly that was...
You were thirsty for battle.
I understand that they were necessary, and I'm not saying that they should have been taken out at all, but it definitely seemed like some of them dragged on a little bit, and that was clearly because, you know, they didn't want to, you know, they had a fixed budget, so all just more and more battle would have eaten up the budget. So, I mean, it made sense in that regard, but there were definitely a couple that I was like, all right, come on, Cersei's drunk, we get it, she's really digging into Sansa here, let's just get back to the battle.
No, I liked them all. I liked them all.
If they didn't get the money, the extra money to do all the CGI stuff, apparently they were just going to do it all in Meagher's whole fast. Yes. They were just going to basically do it that style the entire time.
Oh, yikes, that would have been horrific.
With just Lancel running in and giving them updates.
No, they wouldn't.
I really don't think.
I mean, that's what they were saying.
I don't think they had that many budget constraints. I mean, they spent a month filming that episode, and HBO, I think we discussed before, increased their budget by 20%. To film that episode. Like, that's nuts.
It was worth every penny.
I guess so.
Alan, what did you think about the Hound?
That was really interesting. I enjoyed it. I mean, it was funny to watch him unwind. I didn't make the connection when I was watching it that it was... Like, I could tell that it was the fire that was freaking him out.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't think of why. I didn't think about, like, what his relationship to the idea of burning would be, but it was just kind of, it was cool to watch him, someone who is so loyal the entire series, just kind of unwind immediately like that, and then he's just like, he fell apart so totally.
Yeah,
like, he's just like, give me wine, fuck the king, like he just really fell apart.
Yeah,
I'm and done it, here
and it made
fuck
it,
you fuck you fuck yeah. you
you're cool, I'm out.
And he it really made it. That really was pretty much. His yeah, that's pretty much like what he did, and I think it added some really nice tension to his scene with Sansa,
mm-hmm.
because like I didn't know what he was doing there at first. Like I didn't know if he was there to finish the job or to protect her. And he gave that awesome speech to her, just like, everyone is a killer. You better get used to it. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought that was great.
Yeah. Well, I mean, before I get into the Sansa part, I just want to say. I mean, did you figure it out why he was so afraid of fire maybe after the episode, or did you just not remember?
I didn't think about it during the episode. I was like, wait, are they going to tell me something? But then thinking about it afterwards, I mean, I just assumed because of his of what happened to his face.
Yeah.
That's like why he would have that relationship. Mm-hmm. So he's kind of like, it's like Frankenstein. But no, I didn't. There was too much happening for me to stop and think about it then.
But it wasn't confusing, though, either. You just kind of accepted it for what it was, then.
Yeah. If I had thought of it then, I would have been like, oh, right. But there were a few more things that episode that I didn't get at the time and only realized later that we can go into now or later.
Yeah, what are you talking about?
Yeah, go ahead.
We talked about Stannis getting pulled away by his own men.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that. I guess it was a Lannister soldier that... cut the imp.
Yes.
Right?
Oh, it was the Kingsguard, wasn't it?
It was the Kingsguard.
Yeah, it was Sir Meryn Tran, I think.
I can't remember which one.
That I didn't get during the episode. And at the end, when Papa Lannister came in, I didn't get that was Renly's lover with him.
Yes.
That's right.
Yep. Lore. So then you obviously didn't realize that he was wearing Renly's armor when they first rolled through.
No, I didn't.
They didn't make a big deal out of that.
Yeah, in that scene, I thought that was the cousin that the queen had been sleeping with. I just didn't recognize him from across the.
They do look a lot alike.
Yeah, they're both sissies, long hair.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
They kind of hinted at the
sissies because of their personality, not their sexuality. None of my business.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Lance was all man.
Well,
giving it to Cersei.
Fucking a relative.
I was going to say, they kind of hinted at the whole Tyrion, Meryn Trant thing in the beginning.
I'm not sure if it was Sir Meryn Trant or not in the book. I mean, in the show, but it was Sir Mannen Moore in the book.
Oh, okay.
I knew it wasn't Trant. But I think it might be Trant actually in the show.
Yeah, I mean, I remember them like kind of hinting at something, but... I could definitely see being confused about that whole thing if you hadn't read the books.
Well, I mean, they didn't even really hint at it too much in the book. I mean, it was just Tyrion. I mean, you just heard Tyrion's own paranoia through his thoughts. I mean, it still came very suddenly.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a little, it's easier in the, it was a little harder in the TV show just because, you know, everyone does look a lot alike.
Especially
at night. They had to kind of hint at it. But yeah, I could definitely see that being somewhat confusing. Yeah, Tyrion's face gets sliced up real good.
Yeah, I thought he was dead for a second.
So you don't think he's dead?
Well, I mean, I don't know, but I just mean that, oh god. That shot of him, I thought in that moment that it looked like one of those scenes where, like, you know, they started showing the blood opening up on his face, and it looked like, I thought his whole face was going to fall off or something, just because we'd had so much of that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it seemed almost like it was going to be sort of anime style, where it's like, they cut something, and then you don't, it doesn't, nothing happens, and then all
and then
of a sudden,
just
like,
slow just, slide off. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like, it's like Wile E. Coyote physics, that, like, the thing happens to you when you realize it's happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, then Podrick Payne comes in and definitely explodes that dude's head, and then lovingly holds Tyrion on the battlefield.
Got to.
Yeah.
Pod Payne, getting it done.
You gotta love some Pod Payne for sure.
Yeah. Now Bags and Joe, in the book, Tyrion gets his nose chopped off.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You think he's gonna keep his nose?
I think he keeps his nose.
I think he keeps his nose also. Are you upset that he keeps his nose?
I'm not losing sleep over it.
I mean, yeah. I think the wound that he suffers looks like it's going to end up being a pretty bad scar. Yeah. So I think that they traded the nose, they traded the scar for a nose, which is quite all right with me.
Yeah, I think it definitely would have looked pretty weird if he had gotten the nose chopped off. I'm not sure how they would have done it.
Yeah, it definitely would have looked weird. Let's go back to the Sansa and Hound scene for a second. I guess it didn't seem out of place. I mean, I feel like Sansa should have at least considered it more to go with the Hound, you know? Because she clearly hates being there. And I guess it makes sense that she said no because she wasn't quite sure, you know, if the Hound was just trying to convince her to go out so that she could get killed or something, just because the Hound is known as, you know, Joffrey's right hand, basically.
Yeah, you don't know what that guy's thinking.
But I don't know. It seemed like she should have at least considered it a little bit more. Like, she hates being there, and she just kind of like brushed it off. It's like, no, I'm definitely staying. So I don't know. It seemed a little clumsily done to me, I suppose.
I thought it worked pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, it's a character decision, and it kind of, you could see it both ways. I mean, that's true what you say, but there's also the way that he's always acted around her that I could very well see her, even though he saved her life, I could see her not trusting him because of how nasty she is. And she's scared of him. Like he even said that she couldn't make eye contact with him. Mm-hmm. She thinks of him as less than, and it was so great how he made that speech because, yeah, she looks down on him because of what he is, but it's people like him that keep her alive and keep her safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. What else from this episode?
Well, nothing of anything else, obviously.
Yeah,
we didn't get any Danny, we didn't get any Rob, we didn't get
God, that was so nice too, don't you think? I thought it was so good to just have, I mean, you know, not to be jumping around so much.
It was nice.
You know, because, you know, half the time when I'm watching the show, I'm like, oh, this scene's going to be over in 30 seconds, and then that might be the last we see of them in this episode. I thought this one very early established that we weren't going fucking anywhere else. We were staying here the entire time, and I was like, sweet. So I could just sit back and kind of enjoy it and not worry about when it's going to end and how it's going to end it. And
as a single hour of television, I think they did a great job of balancing, giving us the action that we wanted and giving us some really great character moments, making it a good episode of interactions as well as battle.
Yeah, I mean, I think if they had tried to put other stuff in, not only would it have seemed like they were just trying to cram too much in, I think it also would have been seen as sort of cheap, like, you know, they're going through the battle, and then all of a sudden, maybe when, like, the fighting gets thicker, then all of a sudden we go to you know, Rob just chatting his lady friend up or something, you know?
Right.
So it would have been a cheap cut.
Yeah, not only would it have been cheap, but if they did that, like, I think everybody, especially me, like, I'd be sitting there like, I don't give a fuck what's going on here. Go back to King's Landing. Mm-hmm. Like, you wouldn't be able to look, you wouldn't want to look away from what was going on.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I think it was definitely a wise choice to stay all in King's Landing the entire episode.
Yes.
We definitely didn't need any more Danny House of the Undying teaser scenes.
Pre House of the Undying.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
So, what? I guess the final scene in the episode where Cersei is telling the story to what's his face?
Tommen,
that's the one. What, I mean, and then Tywin busts in and he's like, yeah, the battle's won. I mean, how do you think that was an all right way to end the episode, or did it just seem sort of abrupt?
Yeah, it was a little abrupt. I'm not sure exactly what the resolution is that would have been better, but, it was abrupt.
Yeah, no, Tywin just randomly announcing.
I mean, I guess they could have had him, like, coming through, tearing up shit, they showed Stannis getting pulled away or whatever, so that killed any sort of tension as far as, like, oh, who is it that's going to come through the door? So, I'm not sure exactly what they were going for with that.
Well, it kind of seemed like they were going for that, obviously, we were supposed to think that the Lannisters are going to lose, and that was shown by Cersei. You know, she had clearly given up and was going to kill her boy, and then we're supposed to think that it's Stannis' army busting down that door, and then so I think that was why they chose to reveal it that way.
Yeah, I agree. So do you think next week's episode? I mean, does anyone have anything to say about this week's episode?
I got nothing.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I got anything else on my head.
My bag is empty.
Nice. Alan, you really need to work on You really need to work on your in-the-bag puns in the off-season here.
Okay.
There were a few Roy really choice...
Are you bagging on me about my jokes?
...quotes that we haven't
a little better.
Done yet.
Yeah, okay. What do you got for me, Jimmy TV?
The Hound telling Bronn, you're just like me, only smaller, and then Bronn smiling and saying, and quicker. And then we see Bronn be quicker and, like, cutting people like a fucking surgeon on the battlefield.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty sweet.
That was awesome. It was like knives.
Yeah, that was pretty sweet. Two other ones. Right before the Hound goes down, he goes up to, like, the dude who's been yelling at the archers to shoot arrows. And
yeah.
He said, if any of those flaming fucking arrows come near me, I'll strangle you with your own guts.
And then, choice.
And then later, as they're going out, says, if any of you die with your swords clean, I'll rape your corpses. And then the last one is...
with that one in particular, I was thinking to myself, so was George R.R. sitting at the typewriter typing these things out? Like, is that direct from the script, or did they kind of improv that, or...
I hope George was just sitting at his little typewriter and was like, I need the Hound to say something badass. Wait, I've got it.
Yeah. Typewriters?
He's old school. He's old school.
Seen a picture of George?
I've seen him, but come on. He couldn't, like, at least graduate to a Commodore or something?
No. Nope.
His word processor?
He's using that typewriter real nice.
And then one of the things that I enjoyed the most was in that scene where Tyrion sees Shay and Sansa and kind of goes down and talks to him right before Joffrey makes Sansa kiss it. And as he's leaving, Sansa says, "I will pray for your safe return, my lord." And yeah. Tyrion, like kind of for a second, is like kind of touched, kind of, and he was like, "Oh, you know," he says, "Will you?" And then Sansa just straight face says, "Just as I pray for the kings." And Tyrion was like, "Oh,"
he kind of smiled at it. I love that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He was like, "Man, maybe she's really starting to like me." And then he was like, "Oh, never mind."
Yeah,
good girl.
So next week's episode, clearly we have, next week's is the last episode of the season. We have a bunch of storylines to wrap up. Basically, I'm just wondering if we think that they'll end up going back to King's Landing, or if this will sort of be like a season finale 1A that we just saw, and then season.
We'll get some King's Landing.
You think?
We'll get some. Yeah.
I was thinking we'll definitely get like maybe Margaery, maybe, and I know we're gonna get some Littlefinger up in that piece.
Yeah. Clearly, we're gonna get some Littlefinger.
We'll find out what happened with Tyrion. We'll find out what's going on with Tywin.
Oh, that's right. They do show Tywin being announced as the Hand, don't they? In the previews.
Spoiler alert.
It's in the previews.
No, is it? I didn't watch the previews.
Yeah. As was Littlefinger up in that piece. Talking to Roz, who I know we all need to get resolution on.
Love it from Roz.
Poor Roz.
I can't wait to see the Dany going into the House of the Undying, since we've been teased it for the past 4 episodes.
That's definitely going to be the big one.
Yeah, so I wonder what they'll do. I wonder if they spent most of the money on the battle and they're just going to kind of gloss over the house or what they're going to do. So
we got Jon Snow with up with the wildlings. We got the King of the North doing his thing.
Mm-hmm. We got Arya.
We do have some Arya.
Arya and Jaqen H'Kar. There's no way it could be as good as as last night's episode.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, no. I mean, they've just got too much to do in the short hour span that they have. So
they'll pretty much just be setting up the next season.
Yeah.
I was kind of thinking about that. I'm not sure if there are any really good cliffhangers for them. I don't think people are going to seem to be quite as in flux at the end of the season as they were in season one.
What were they doing at the end of season one? I can't remember.
Everything was in disarray at the end of season one. Ned Stark pretty much got his head chopped off an hour beforehand, and we didn't know what the hell was going on with anybody.
Danny's Khalasar had left, and then
Danny had just birthed a dragon.
Oh, that's what. Yeah, the birth of the dragon is just the big thing, right?
And I believe Jon Snow went. They went under the wall to go north as well. So.
Yep, everything was going. Everything seemed to be going in a direction at the end of the last season. Whereas I think at the end of this season, a lot of things are going to be kind of more at peace. There is one thing that I could think of that would be truly badass, but I'm not going to say what it is because it'd be a huge spoiler alert.
Okay.
Good for you.
The books also kind of start becoming a little less focused after the second book as well, where it's kind of like there's not like a clear path that all the
as far as like
are.
A linear timeline goes.
Exactly.
Yeah,
like it kind of not stalls out, but maybe like goes off on like a different direction as they're going. They're not just going forward anymore. Maybe they're going like off to the side or something. So it should be interesting to see how they end everyone's story arc and set up next season as well with this last episode.
I just remembered also that. We should be getting a little bit of Jamie and Brienne, and that storyline could end in a pretty cool place also.
Delightful.
Oh, man, yeah.
I forgot about that sitcom on a canoe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, on that little-ass boat.
So I think that's going to do it for the Game of Thrones this week.
Just one more left. And then when did they do another one? Is it a year away? Do they do it?
So long. 10 months.
And they're splitting the third book up into 2 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Giving George that extra time to write the book.
I think we all know how the third season's going
to
end.
There's plenty to go around.
We do.
Storm Sewage.
Alan, I'll give you a hint. The comet crashes into the earth.
Oh, yeah. They haven't showed us the comet anymore, have they?
Yeah, no one. That comet just kind of disappeared after that first episode.
They blew it off just like they blew it off in the book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, seriously.
But all right.
Wait, hold on. Speaking of blowing off, they never mentioned this, and I thought it was kind of weird. They never showed Melisandre in that episode. Never mentioned her.
They mentioned her once.
Didn't they say in the previous episode, didn't they have the scene where, like, Davos
told her to stay away or whatever? Stannis to stay away. Yeah, they did say that.
Okay. Yeah, because the victory would be Melisandre's and not Stannis's.
Right. Okay, good. I forgot about that.
And then, and the only other mention of her, I think, was when Varys was talking about how he got cut.
Yep.
Except that he didn't talk about it.
Yeah. He teased it. We needed one teaser scene this episode, and that was it.
Yeah.
The riveting story of Varys losing his penis. But yeah, I think on that note.
On that note,
Game of Thrones is going to be done. We'll come at you guys next week with more Game of Thrones. Before we say goodbye to Jimmy TV, you have anything to say?
Game of Thrones related.
What do you have to say for yourself, anything. Jimmy TV?
Explain.
Okay, just a couple of random things, I guess. Why not? The past 2 weeks, I've been playing Diablo 3 a crap ton. I think I've logged about 50 hours at this point. My character just hit level 51. I'm a total badass.
I'm hoping that we can...
What character class are you?
Okay, I'm going to the bathroom during this.
I'm a male barbarian. If any of you guys has Diablo 3, hit me up.
I wish I did. I do not, though. Are we going to get a little write-up on the website at some point or another?
Potentially.
So in single player mode, you can campaign with other people that are in single player mode or whatever.
You can, and I've done some. I've gone back and done some stuff with in the multiplayer, and the multiplayer is actually a lot of fun.
So do you play with some randos?
Oh yeah, total randos.
And do you have like the
some of them have like the Asian names? No, I do not do a headset. But
do other people chat with you
sometimes?
Ooh.
Like they'll talk and you can hear them, or like they'll like
they'll type chat.
Yeah, because you guys got to come up with battle strategy and the like, right? Like I've seen in that video.
What? Yeah, no, it's not
Michael Jenkins or whatever.
I'm Leroy Jenkins. I'm the barbarian. I pretty much just lead the charge into places, and everyone else just kind of hangs around outside of me.
Nice.
While I go in and die, you know, wonderfully, splendidly deaths, and then spawn and do it again.
Is it as awesome as Diablo 2 was?
It's definitely different. I mean, it's definitely as different from Diablo 2 as Diablo 2 was from Diablo.
Okay.
But it's definitely fun in its own way.
Nice.
The other quick thing that I'm lately obsessed with was yesterday, I started reading a book at 2:30 and finished it like 5 hours later, and that was Ender's Game. That book was sweet.
You've never read Ender's Game before?
I had never read Ender's Game before.
Wow.
They're making that a movie, aren't they?
They are
into a movie.
I tried to get a job on set.
I don't see how the movie's can be any good.
Well, it's been in production for like years.
That's not a good sign.
Yeah, no, and they've been trying to make it since like the early 90s. And Orson Welles
Card.
That's what I meant. Orson Card was never happy with the script. So he's like, fuck everyone, I'm writing the script. So we'll see what happens. But I think they're filming
20 years later.
Yeah. But I think they're filming in New Orleans right now, or will be filming in New Orleans soon. So should be interesting to see. I mean, Ender's Game especially requires so many, like, kids that's always a bad touch. Because, I mean, the whole thing is basically kids. So it's like, if you get, like, some crappy kid actors in there, your movie is going to suck, no matter how good the material is. So
is this like a combination of fucking Hunger Game combined with Starship Troopers or some shit like that?
Pretty much. You pretty much just crushed the nail on the head.
Kind of.
Little kids basically get drafted into a government program. Like, you know, the smartest kids in the world get drafted into a government program, pretty much.
Yeah, to train... To fight an alien race.
Elite fighters, yeah. Who are bugs, who are indeed insect bugs.
They are huge insects, indeed. And Orson Card there, he invented the iPad, basically, right?
Yeah, they all carry around desks, quote-unquote, but pretty much it's just an iPad. It's actually really cool. Because, I mean, as soon as they were, you know, we're talking about it, I'm like, oh, holy shit, they're talking about basically 3D iPods, 3D iPads.
Yeah,
that's pretty
maybe
cool.
That's what they were waiting for. They're like, we don't have the technology yet.
tube technology.
Actually, I believe there were some iPads in 2001: A Space Odyssey.
Yeah, they've been iPads going way back in the sci-fi fantasy realm.
That's fine. The only thing I really wanted to bring it up was I was curious as to if any of you guys have read any of the sequels and would suggest where I start, because there appears to be a lot of the Ender's Game series. Yeah. So I was wondering what people would recommend.
All right, Jimmy.
It sounds like my best bet is to start reading the series that follows Bean, little Beansy.
Okay, well, I can tell you this off air unless we want to keep this in the pod. I think I've read almost all of them.
Why wouldn't you just read them in order of the way that they were published?
Well, I mean,
It sounds like they get kind of shitty.
Okay. This is what happens. All right.
I don't want you to... No spoilers, damn it.
Well, no, I'm not going to tell you exactly what happens. Okay, so Ender's Game, like the Ender's...
You read any of these, Kara?
The Ender's books, like, follow Ender... And they basically get mad philosophical, almost.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty much the way the first one was going towards the end anyway.
Yeah, and so, like, basically the next three Ender's books get more and more philosophical, almost. So it's kind of like, I mean, they're interesting, but it's not like, they're not as good as Ender's Game, you know, they're more adult-ish, I suppose.
Boring.
Yeah, no, and boring. Then... Boring. Yeah, and then he wrote Ender's Shatter or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, Ender Shatter is the first one that follows Beansy.
Yeah, and that's. Yeah.
Wait, is this the same Beansy that's in?
Yep, exact same one. In fact, they hired the actors to play him in the movie.
Jake, what am I talking about?
Lewis Stevens, Even Stevens.
Even Stevens.
But yeah, no. So, in any case, the Bean one starts, and then he's got like four or five of his books of his own, and the Bean ones are more grounded. The Bean ones are more grounded in Earth, so like they're not as hard to follow, and they're a little bit more political, but they're pretty good. There's some action that goes on.
It gets on with Ender's brother pretty much.
Yeah, it's basically Bean and Ender's brother for that series. So I mean, you know, they're a little different, but I would probably. I mean, it's not like you need to know what's going on. If you want to read them chronologically, read all the Bean ones first and then read the Ender ones, because like the second Ender one doesn't even happen until like 60 years.
5 billion years. Yeah.
So,
spoiler alert.
Yeah, you've got some reading to do if you plan on reading all of them. So
cool.
And I think he just wrote like a novella, like another Ender novella for it as well, like in the past couple years, which I've not read, but.
Shadows in Flight.
There you go. In any case, Jimmy TV,
yeah,
it was nice talking to you.
Yeah, see you guys later.
We'll see you next week.
Cool.
All right, from Game of Thrones to Mad Men, another epic episode in its own right. I think this one probably packed the biggest emotional punch of the season, at least it did to me. I definitely did not feel right after watching it earlier today. I felt a little weird. Felt a little icky.
Yes.
Scuzzy episode.
Yeah. What? I mean, where do we want to start exactly? I mean, clearly this episode revolved around Don's women, as usually the best ones do. I don't know. Where do we want to start?
I think you were right that this kind of focused on Joan and her decision. Mm-hmm. And kind of like the completely unfair position that she was put in by the men at this office.
Mm-hmm.
I was shocked that you never know what an episode is going to be about. And I was shocked that Pete even brought it up to her.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that would be the end of it. You know, we were talking last week about how you never know with this show what the conflict is going to be, because we were kind of saying how it's all going to come down to if they can do Jaguar or not. And that'll show us, you know, if Don has it or not. And like we said, the show always like gives us that third option of like, well, what if they do just get it, but not the way they want it?
Yeah.
But not the right way.
Yeah, I mean, I thought these last episodes, at least two of the three, were going to be almost all focused around Don and Ginsburg, pitching back and forth. But instead, we're given this entirely different episode where, I mean, the creative matters, but it doesn't, because the dude, the really Italian dude, just wants some Joan boobies.
Yeah.
And
I mean, I don't blame him.
Yeah, oh, no, you can't blame him, but, it was, it definitely was something that came out of left field, including the other storylines as well with Peggy and Megan, which we'll get to a little later.
You're right that it was kind of about the creative not mattering, and I think that that's something else that's, you know, that's been creeping up on Don that really freaks him out, that the creative is starting to not be as important anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, it's interesting because last season it was all about the creative, you know?
Yeah.
That was how they were getting pub, was that their creative was so good, and that's why people were coming to them. And it seems like just in a year to a year and a half, either Sterling Cooper, Draper, Price has, like, regressed back to the pack where they realize that it actually is just about getting as much money as possible, you know? Or if there was a philosophical change in the marketing industry, and then, like, a sort of backlash to that would be, wait a minute, we still need to make sure that we have clients, you know? So it seemed like last year was definitely all about the creative, and now we're sort of back to where we've always been, and realizing that no matter how good the creative's going to be, it doesn't matter all that much as long as they just land the account, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Are you surprised by the decision, the Jones decision in the end, or any of the decisions leading up to Jones' decision, the vote without Don, or,
When I saw it, I was really shocked that Pete had the balls to approach her about it, and then obviously that the majority of the people, of the heads, kind of went along with it, the partners. Mm-hmm. But in retrospect, I guess it's not as shocking as it should have been.
Yeah.
Just because of the overall ideas towards women and their place in the office. And obviously, you know, and of Joan kind of putting on the airs of, you know, kind of being the slut or whatever, just like as far as her outfits and her appearance and stuff like that. So, I mean, like, you know, like from our point of view, obviously it's, you know, it's astounding that they would go along with it. But I guess trying to put myself in that time of period, it's maybe not as shocking as it should have been.
Right. That it's shocking to watch, but then when you go back and think about it, like, almost everything that happened, like, it was very organic. Like, it shocks me because I wouldn't have the balls to go talk to Joan, but of course Pete would. Like, he would
he
would ever put Joan's, a secretary's, dignity over the possibility of, you know, his success and his ambition. And of course Joan, I think, is going to accept it. The amount of money that she was being offered and what it got raised to, that, you know, she's pretty much going to be set for life now, mm-hmm. as long as the company stays afloat. Like, that's just like, what would you do if you're in that situation and you just had a baby?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely don't fault Joan for going through with it, but it's just, you know, as Alan, you were saying, the incredible burden that she was put on by the assholes in charge of the production.
Yeah.
It's just unbelievable.
As a little note, I think I was reading the Grantland recap, the TV recap today, and they said that Peggy's salary of $19,000, which we'll get to in a minute, is worth $134,000-something today. So, I mean, them Lane offering her $50,000 is just, you know, that's fucking ridiculous. And then she ended up getting even more. She ended up getting even more with the 5%.
I did like how Lane kind of talked her into doing that, mm-hmm. not only to get her more money, but obviously so they wouldn't have to pay cash up front because of his little embezzlement scheme.
Yeah, that was smart.
Good old Lane.
But yeah, obviously a lot of money. The $50,000 would have been.
Yeah. What about the scene where Don goes to see Joan at her house? And then we get the sort of back and forth between Don's creative and – maybe not Don's creative, but Don's pitch and Jones sleeping, and then we get the same scene again, showing that Don had actually been too late as opposed to getting there too early.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, it puts a different emphasis on when Joan was like, wait, I thought everyone was on board. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just as far as Don being protective or whatever, clearly that comes from, you know, his mom being a Hua. And that's what I was reading it as, is like him trying to kind of protect her from having to do anything like that, kind of loss of dignity. But as far as them replaying it, I thought it was good. I thought it definitely packed more of a punch than if they just played it straight chronological.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it was interesting to see. I mean, that decision probably has. There's a few things going on there. I mean, it was interesting to see. Do we think Don's chivalry was pure, or do we think it was more about him being like, I still need to prove that the creative will land this account, and that was why he went.
I didn't think of it that way, but I think there's definitely a hint of that. I mean, maybe less. I think his intentions were more pure than, say, Lane's when he was like, "Don't take the cash up front." But yeah, I think there definitely had to have been at least that in the back of his head, probably.
Yeah, I'm sure that his own motivations were a part of it too, but even before I thought of that, and when the situation first came up, you knew that Don wasn't going to be happy about it. He doesn't like that kind of stuff. He doesn't, you know, he won't. He has his dignity, and I think he's all, even before he was in a sort of I need to prove myself situation, this kind of thing doesn't feel like any sort of victory to him. It feels like a failure, like being owned by somebody. I think that's probably how he would look at it.
Well, I mean, it mirrored the pitch about how they're being owned. You know, that the whole Jaguar thing about finally you can own something, and then
yeah,
it ends up Sterling Cooper Draper Price is owned by Jaguar, as opposed to the other way around, which was kind of hinted at as well by I can't remember who said it, but they were like, yeah, we don't really need the car. You know, we don't really need the car. The business would be. The car would be bad for business. I think it was Lane who said that, because it's basically just another. I mean, assuming they don't get more business, it's basically just another lucky strike. Whereas, you know, Jaguar's probably going to end up being like 80% of their business. You know,
yeah.
And then they're back to where they were, where one business basically. I mean, they know now that they can sort of keep going on, but. You know, so
right, they're putting a lot of eggs into one basket. Mm-hmm. What did you guys think of Ginsburg coming up with the idea and kind of going back against Don, going against the mistress idea, or going back to the mistress idea?
Well, it was kind of, I mean, Don's decision about the mistress idea. I mean, we first see them pitching it, and he's clearly jazzed about it. But he ended up changing, I think, mainly because of Megan, you know? Mainly because of Megan's influence at home.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's why he went away from it. But I think it was kind of just like Don, you know, the rivalry never really happened between him and Ginsburg. Because Don's thinking about the idea and Ginsburg's thinking about it. And it seemed Don was more like, When Ginsburg pitched that idea to Don, it seemed like Don was more like, oh man, you know, this is how it usually is, or this is how it used to be, sort of thing, as opposed to being like, well, what the hell, why didn't I think of that, sort of thing, you know? So I thought it was pretty good.
What do you think about the duality of Ginsburg, like, obviously turning his head, or turning his back to, like, the Burlesque show that the redhead was doing, mm-hmm. And kind of being above that sort of thing, but then at the same time coming up, you know, with the mistress pitch that plays into the sexuality of the consumer.
I mean, Ginsburg's just a weird guy in general, because this isn't the first time he's kind of turned away. You know, he was so clearly shaken by the images of the Detroit riots in the beginning. So it's kind of more of a, almost, he seems to be against voyeurism almost, as opposed to just, you know, just sexual mores or anything. So, but yeah, at the same time, he's working in this world that's all about that sort of thing, all about selling sex and violence and all that kind of stuff. So, and he's really good at it. So I don't know.
Exactly.
I don't know what to think of it. There's some rumors on the internet going around that he's gay.
Wait, there's rumors on the internet?
Yeah.
There's
some chit chat about him being gay. I don't really see that, but you never know. That could definitely explain that part.
Well, I don't see how it would play into him turning his back to her or whatever. I mean, that would be like kind of a weird behavior. Like, yeah, Sal wouldn't have done that. Sal would have like gone along with it or what have you.
It's not like he's disgusted, you know, by women,
right? Like a sociopath or something.
I think he doesn't like indecency, as we've seen. I think he's disgusted by the. I mean, it was a shameless spectacle going on, and I'm not saying at all that I would have acted the way he did. I would have enjoyed it. But I think I see the kind of like, this is so pathetic how she, it's like, I think he was looking at that situation the way that, like, when you see a really like shitty situation at a bar, like if you see a girl being really desperate, or like, you know, just like some jackass doing really well or something like that, you kind of like get grossed out by the animalism of a situation. I think that was the reaction he was having.
Well, I mean, I want to know how that all ended up happening in the first place. Like, you go from her being like, don't say anything bad about Megan, I'm like her best friend, to her ass hanging out of the back of her dress crawling across the boardroom table there. I mean, that was just fucking a crazy transition in itself.
It was. You know, and I think that what was also so good about that episode was moments like that that made you, like, women, even now, but especially back then, like, women are so hypersexualized, and Joan obviously gets that in this episode, and the way that they show that girl on the table, like, there are things that you want, there are things that, like, guys want, but they showed us, I think, the too much of it, like, kind of like a careful what you wish for kind of thing, like, this is what the hypersexualization of women looks like, and look how not sexy it is, how gross it is. Joan, like, that was like that. I mean, it was like a rape scene watching Joan with that guy. Mm-hmm. She was so, you just felt bad for her, and like I would never think this before in the show, but I was kind of like, God, I kind of just want Joan to put her clothes back on.
Right.
Well, I mean, going back to what Ginsberg said earlier in the season about how he's an alien, could it just be that maybe? I mean, I'm sure he's uncomfortable about it around it. But could it be maybe he's also kind of playing that whole thing up just because he realizes what going with the crowd does, you know?
Yeah.
Considering he's a Jew from Nazi Germany.
I like it.
Maybe he's kind of acting up or acting out away from that. So, you know, when everyone is interested in seeing the riot photos, you know, he initially has interest. And then maybe he realized, oh, wait a minute, you know, this sort of stuff is you know, how Nazism begins and stuff. So maybe he kind of acts out against it. I don't know. But
he's very wary of any go with the flow kind of situation. Yeah, that makes sense. Right.
Plus, he seemed real excited about those lobsters. Last time I checked, strict Jews are not allowed to have some lobsters. So.
Well, we don't know. We don't know how religious he is. I don't think we've seen any evidence of that.
This episode really reminded, I mean, while the women are kind of stepping out and trying to become their own or trying to get their own, it still reminded everyone that men still run everything. Because even, I mean, clearly in Joan's case, that was the most brutal case where it was like, if you don't sleep with them, you're not going to get your money or whatever, to really boil that down. But even in Peggy's case, she kind of needs to go to Freddie and have Freddie Rumson tell her what to do before she actually decides to leave Sterling Cooper Draper Price. And Megan's audition, you know, is her and then three dudes that are telling her to turn around.
Yeah.
Even though they're getting more power, it was still a reminder that men are really still in control in this world.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I guess let's talk about Peggy. Are you surprised that she actually left? Are you worried that we're not going to see as much of her? I mean, I guess we haven't seen that much of her this season as is.
Actually, I was thinking that maybe we'll be able to follow her at this other ad place, and we'll like kind of see how another shop runs. And I think
that
could be
cool. That would be really interesting if they do that. Because yeah, I can't picture us losing Peggy or like her being diminished. But you know, maybe we will get to just see her in a new situation. That would be really cool.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it was nice to see her kind of get her mojo back a little there with the impromptu pitch of changing the perfume or the cologne, I guess, whatever mm-hmm. it was, so that they stayed there.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I'm interested to see. I mean, I assume that we will in fact follow Peggy to Teddy Chow's place, or however you say his last name. Shaw? Is it Shaw?
Which guy?
The guy that interviewed her at the milkshake place.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
Teddy
that
Shaw,
guy.
That's spelled Chaugh, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, it should be interesting to see how other places run. And if, I mean, she's taking a huge leap, because even though she wasn't totally respected at Sterling Cooper Draper Price, like, they still all knew her, and she still had some clout, whereas now she's going into a completely different situation where, I mean, we haven't seen very much from other firms, but it seems like every other firm is still in the mindset of just guys and not women. And she has been given, you know, she's the chief of the creative staff, I believe, or something, chief copywriter, I think. So she will have people working under her. So it should be interesting to see how, if the transition goes smoothly, and if she ends up maybe regretting her decision a little bit.
It'll be interesting to see if she, I suspect that she isn't going to have very much respect for that guy that she's working for. I mean, they last year completely outsmarted them mm-hmm. when that firm and SCDP were competing for that Japanese company's account. Yeah, and they right. tricked them with that fake motorcycle ad. That guy's a douchebag. I think that she must know that. And so I wonder if she will resent working for a guy that she's probably smarter than.
I mean, he's kind of they kind of set him up as a Don Light almost, whereas he's trying to be Don and be as forward-thinking as Don was last season, but he's just not the same, and he's more worried about trying to outthink Don as opposed to just trying to get the best idea.
Yeah.
So it should be interesting to see. I mean, I have a feeling we'll end up getting a lot of Peggy scenes where Shaw brings her into the offices, like, all right, what do you think Don would do for this?
Yeah.
As opposed to being like, all right, Peggy, why don't you come up with like 5 ideas?
Yeah, that can't possibly go well.
Yeah. So, but yeah, no, I mean, it was definitely kind of heart-wrenching to see her leave, especially in her little goodbye scene with Don there.
That was rough.
That was so weird when Don like went down on one knee and was like kissing her hand or whatever.
Yeah, no, it was definitely you don't really see Don and her have a connection really too often. It's more like you get a random spurt of connection in one episode, and then Don just rides her in all the other episodes.
He does, but they've always had.
Oh yeah, no, they've always been close. It's just really crazy to see like. I mean, Don just keeps it so calm and collected for the most part. It's crazy to see him get that emotional.
I thought that was such a great scene, and he acted really well in it. I was watching that to see how he would react, because I knew he would come apart. He's so right. insecure about his relationships and where he stands in life. And Peggy is one of those people that he takes for granted, but that she supports him. And, like, all the scenes that they've had, were other than Megan, I think she's the closest person to him in his life, and he doesn't realize that. And so it was crazy how he just, like, he went that gamut of emotions that, like, first he just tried to be, like, not taking it seriously, yeah, and he pretty much, mm-hmm. yeah, you know, he begged, and then he got, like, angry, and then he got, like, really, like, petty and resentful about it. And then when he just gave that long kiss on her hand and she started crying, like, that, it was kind of brutal.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, he definitely went through the gamut of emotions there. It was definitely intense. I mean, I almost thought that she would end up being being like, okay, well, I'll come back, you know?
Yeah.
But the fact, I mean, I'm glad that she left because it's clear that she at least needed to get some power back in her and Don's relationship. Whether she comes back or not later on will be interesting to see. But,
yeah, no,
it was definitely crazy to see Don go from, like, just trying to let it, brush it off of his shoulder, being like, okay, yeah, you got me. You know, this is a great time for you to, this is a great time for you to get a raise, to being like, holy shit, she's actually leaving. So, it was kind of, yeah, and I mean, he doesn't really have, I mean, he's always relied on her the most out of anyone. He doesn't really have someone who tells, I mean, she backs him up, but she can also tell him what the fuck he's doing wrong, too, and he respects that.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems almost like Don has lost, in this past episode, Don has just lost an incredible amount of power that he once wielded over the company between losing Peggy and Peggy basically being his right-hand man, and now none of his copywriters really respect Don as much, especially since they haven't seen Don really work, do Don work, you know?
Yeah.
And then also selling out to Jaguar in the same, yeah, having the partners go behind his back, so.
Now that I'm thinking about it, like, that shouldn't have played out any other way. That Peggy, as much as I don't want her to leave, like, Don kind of, this was one of those things that Don deserved, just as much as Betty leaving him. Like, I just remembered how he threw that money at her face at the beginning of the episode. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't treat someone like that. And I couldn't believe that he didn't even, like, try to be like, okay, is this about what I did the other day? I'm really sorry about that. Like, that should have been an apology that he made if he really wanted her to stay.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he just realized that she wasn't going to stay, and so he didn't want to maybe cheapen the moment, if you will, by apologizing and almost groveling for her to come back.
He did grovel. He said, name any amount of money and it's yours.
That's not groveling, though. That's a little different.
What is it?
Getting on his knees and being like, oh, I'm so sorry for how I've treated you. I'm so sorry for throwing money in your face. I'm so sorry to do this and this and that.
But, you know, he did apologize about his behavior in general.
Yeah. But, I mean, if he were to go into a long diatribe on every wrong he's ever committed.
Sure. But what I'm saying is I think it's just as sad for him to, the not even, like, any parameters, just any amount of money, name it, and then being like, well, I'm responsible for every good thing that's ever happened to you, like, pretty much, like, pulling that card, like, that was kind of bitch-ass as well.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, no, and then, of course, Don, what is Megan trying out for?
I don't know.
I mean, she never really says, and then all of a sudden she's going to be in Boston for 3 months, and she makes some weird quip about being like, it's not like I'm going to be, you know, some cocktail waitress doing something or rather, you know? So it's like, I mean, is this a traveling show? I mean, what the hell is she trying out for? Especially since in the audition, at the end of the show, all we see her do is spin around.
Well, I'm guessing it was some sort of a regional play. Like, lots of, you know, there would be an audition in New York, but the play would be in Boston. Like, they do things like that. But I think that quip that she made, it was kind of strange, but I think she was trying to say to Don that, like, you don't believe in what I'm doing, and you think that, like, I'm just taking some cheap job or something, but this would, I think she was trying to say the flip side of the comment she made is that it's not going to be that. It's going to be me, like, on some famous stage in front of lots of people, and, like, you need to respect that, which I don't think he does.
Yeah, no, I mean, it just seemed really weird, the fact that all of a sudden, I mean, I guess Don could have easily just glossed over anything that she told him beforehand, but it just seems sort of weird that she didn't tell him about the Boston thing, and then in the audition, all we see is them check out her ass, basically, you know?
Yeah, I probably wasn't expecting that. She seemed pretty
uncomfortable
by that.
Back. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think it was kind of bullshit that she might not have even mentioned to Don that it was going to be in Boston. And I think that's at the end of that conversation when he was just like, yeah, go keep doing whatever the hell you want. This is one of those things that we're starting to see about her youth, that it's not all positive, that she is still a little self-centered and, like, thinks that she can just go do whatever she wants.
Well, I mean, she's an actress as well, so
Booyah!
No offense to you, Alan, but actors and actresses seem to be a little bit more...
I completely agree.
Self-interested than
absolutely.
The most.
They're the worst people you'll ever meet.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, so clearly Don is losing power left and right all over the place in this episode. And I thought it was interesting where Megan basically just put it out on the table and was like, look, you know, I might not get it, but if I don't take it because of you, I'm going to become Betty. You know? She had that one line on the couch that was basically just like, I'm going to resent you the rest of my life if you make me not take this. So, I don't know. It just, their relationship continues to get worse and worse, it seems. Even though it was definitely better than her throwing a plate of spaghetti at the wall. Clearly, everything is not sunshine and rainbows in their relationship and their marriage anymore. So.
Yeah.
Alan, I mean, I know you want it to work out.
Mm.
Do you think, I mean, I feel like almost they could still remain married, but have her shipped off somewhere else so that we get kind of adulterous Don back a little bit, but still married? I don't know. What do you, I mean, how do you feel the relationship stands at this point?
Are you asking?
What do you think the future holds for them?
Well, I think that this is another one of those situations where I would say it's going to be something that we didn't even think of. Mm-hmm. It's like what they always like to do on the show is set up, do you think this is going to happen or that's going to happen? The answer is neither. But I don't know where they stand. This was definitely showing us some of the darker sides of their relationship. I still think that they could be heading... They're definitely heading downward. I still think that they're in a good place. Don is still in a good place, and we don't really know what's going on with Megan. But, you know, I guess it really is going to depend on if and when she gets what she wants from acting. If she does get, you know, a play, the Boston thing or something like it, and she moves, then it could probably be bad news. But who knows if she's even going to ever book anything, because many, many actors go their whole lives without ever booking anything. It's like, you don't know what's going to happen. So I don't know. I think that they're still in an okay place marriage-wise. You know, like how you just said, it's not all sunshine and lollipops in the relationship. I look at that as who on that show does. And what does is there such thing as a happy ending, or what does that look like? I think compared to the other couples on the show, they're still in we're okay territory, but hovering towards the bottom of that.
Mm-hmm.
They could very soon be down the path to it being over.
Yeah, I mean, I'd probably agree with you there. I have a feeling that maybe I could easily see something along the lines of Don kind of throwing himself back more into work and being happy there again, and Megan getting this job and then realizing that she's pregnant or something, you know, sort of kind of craziness like that. But yeah, Megan definitely pulled a Don there when she was like, yo, I'm fucking you at the office just so I can be confident for my audition. You're not going to get anything out of it sort of thing, which was quite interesting.
Yeah.
But yeah, no. Is there anything else that we might not have mentioned so far?
Can't think of anything.
Megan Pig, yeah. Like we just said, that was a really powerful episode, I felt like. And definitely one of the best, the best of the season.
Yeah, no, it was definitely.
After the one where Pete gets knocked on his ass by Lane.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Oh, yeah, speaking of, I liked at the end of their meeting that Lane stood up and kind of looked at Pete for a second. I think he was kind of still asserting his dominance over him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There was a moment where they just had extended eye contact, and I think it was just like he was punking him. You could see in Lane's eyes just like, don't say a goddamn word right now. And Pete just kind of was like, okay, I won't.
Yeah, no, that was definitely good. But yeah, no, I don't know. Yeah, it was definitely an awesome episode. The best ones are usually when they're able to sort of weave the, you know, multiple storylines into each other, and this one definitely did that, so. But yeah, no, I don't know. I think that's probably going to do it, right, for Mad Men?
Yeah.
That does it.
As usual, Alan posted a nice little movie sequel article today on the website, so you guys should always come out and check out the website for new material.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to reading that. Dropped a little Home Alone 2 in there, I saw.
Mm-hmm.
The worst offender.
in-the-bag-with-2gs.com. Also, I guess I should announce, although I'm sure everyone that listens to the podcast already knows, but I will be writing some TV recaps for shows that we don't really discuss on this podcast or on the website, mainly Veep and HBO's new show that is called The Newsroom, I believe.
Oh.
And you guys can go over to thecelebritycafe.com, all one word, and check those out, and hopefully... you know, you can post those and do whatever you want on that.
Please be gentle with The Newsroom. Aaron Sorkin is my favorite.
Aaron Sorkin is your favorite?
Yes.
BFF ever.
Well, in that case, I'm taking it down.
Ah, shit.
Mm-hmm. Burning it to the ground, Alan. But, So you guys can come check those out over there. And next week, we'll come at you guys with yet another... I guess the last Game of Thrones and Mad Men combination podcast of the year. And, we'll talk to you guys later.
Keep it real.
Yeah.